Hey, you're listening to The Growth Signal. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm Dusty Gollison.
And we're going to get right into it. What is your hot take?
You know, we are just dealing with building a sales team again on one of our divisions. And the hot take is AI will not replace a relationship. And a lot of folks are coming at you, trying to sell you their lead gen with AI, automating AI, email, AI, everything. And, you know, at the end of the day, sales is finding the right person that cares about a relationship, that cares about the benefits to their clients, not just trying to sell the next widget. So AI is not a shortcut when it comes to relationships.
I want to double click on something you just said, especially because the idea of AI not being a shortcut, I think is one of the biggest blind spots that every single leader who is trying to implement AI for the right reason or the wrong reason is missing, because AI is not a shortcut. It is not something that you can just slap on and hope for the best. It's not something that you can just turn on and it magically changes the world for you. There's a lot of hard underlying work that goes into implementing AI, from the data it needs access to, the processes you put in place, the guardrails you put in place. And at the end of the day, you're right. It is not a person. It is not going to replace the way we feel about each other in those sales process, in those transaction experiences.
Yeah, I think AI reveals the blatant transactional nature people have in their relationships when they try to implement it. Because usually when you try to create an automation or a bot or something, it's really one-sided in its task. It's trying to solve a problem for you, not for the other person. And so people can see through that very clearly, whether you call an airline and try to get your ticket changed. AI doesn't really care about the situation. AI just cares about getting you done and out of there, not taking up a labor FTE and costing them more money. So AI is a very blatantly greedy tool when just done basically. To do AI correctly and to do it really well takes time. And you might as well employ a really talented person for those relational-based kind of transactions that you need to get solved, especially in sales or in the customer service.
And I think it maybe is a fundamental misunderstanding of how AI really works for a lot of people, because AI is designed, or automation, or whatever you're designing, is designed to follow to whatever outcome you've created. So if your ultimate outcome is closing a deal, or mitigating loss, or minimizing overhead, or whatever the thing is that you are trying to achieve with AI, that bias kind of seeps into the process, whether you realize it or not. And how 100%. Many of us are designing, I'm going to guess not very many, are designing AIs who the ultimate outcome that you're looking for, the ultimate goal, the ultimate mission of this little robot you're creating is to create a great customer experience in which the customer wins more than we do.
Not really. No one's really doing that.
I would be shocked if you're listening to this podcast and you are one of those people, drop a name in the comments, give me a call, tell me that, because I would love to meet you. You are a true unicorn.
Yeah. AI is definitely, like I said, a very selfish tool when implemented just in any kind of process. I think AI works really, really well in like automations that are not customer facing. So, you know, moving data from one point to another point, doing ETLs, scraping, et cetera, et cetera. But I would never have AI be customer facing, except in, hey, this is a bot, we'll answer whatever questions that will put you in touch with the right people. You could have it as maybe a sorting tool or a filter tool. But, we're working with a large housing authority building a AI receptionist. And the key is, you know, at first, they want, oh, we'd love to have an avatar. I'm like, that's the worst thing you can need, because you're not putting a real person in front. So you're devaluing the customer experience right away. So people are going, oh, you're trying to, you know, pawn me off in a bot. What we would like them to do is really be an information-rich tool that helps people get the right person to solve their problem. I think that's the proper way if you're going to do an AI tool to actually accelerate customer service or relationship management.
Okay, but if I hear you on the avatar, because those things creep me out. They don't move naturally. Like, if you ever interact with one of those, they kind of just like will say something and then we'll just stare at you. And then like they just don't move like people, right? Like I'm all over the place and having a conversation because, you know, I'm a human. I'm excited to be here. But if we can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, if the cat is already out of the bag, pick whatever metaphor you want. When it comes to kind of that digital transformation experience and the things that we are being asked to do as leaders by the board, by our CEO, by whoever is pushing this forward, how do we do this in a way that considers all of the technology and infrastructure we've brought in before, that considers all the people and process and data that we already have in place? And like, is there a right way to do this, or is this just a destined to fail initiative from the start and we should all accept that?
I think the proper way to do it is use AI as an enablement tool, not a replacement tool. So that toothpaste is now that proverbial tube. Instead of allowing it to splash around out there in front of your clients, I would take that tool and actually use it to actually leverage individuals' time, get them the information they need more rapidly so that they can serve more people. Now, I've seen that great tool where a call center where an AI listened to the call as it was going on and re-scripted the conversation constantly based on feedback from the caller. But the user was the person actually talking to the person, a real live human being. So it was an enablement tool that helped sift through data really rapidly and make sure that it had information for that call that was relevant to the user. So the customer service experience was great. So I think using it as an enablement tool and realigning it to being a back office process is where you really need to go for it. I would not put it out in the wild in the front without a person in front of it.
Yeah, I think I like the distinction, right? Like, make me better as a person, make me better and more responsive, make me more able to focus on the connection that I'm trying to build, rather than all the minutia that goes into trying to build those relationships. I once interviewed a sales team who told me that they spent 20 to 25 hours a week doing data entry and set up with customers.
That's not a sales team. That's a back office team.
Right. And at the end of the day, though, they're being measured and judged and rewarded on how much time they spend with customers and how many deals they close. And yet this process was in place and this infrastructure was in place that required that much level of data entry. So then, you know, they're dissatisfied, they're frustrated, everybody's dissatisfied because the sales aren't going the way they need to go. And yet the infrastructure and the process needed to transform. I could see AI being a big boost for them if they could cut even that in half, 50% less time data entry versus what they should be doing, which is talking to customers.
Yeah, I've always looked at CRM as the risk to your sales teams because they end up, you know, worshiping the data than actually serving the client.
Yeah. And a lot of leaders do that, right? Because there was this push for many, many years, and I think it still is there. I think it's still important. And it probably is true, but people have taken it to an extreme of data-driven and this idea of making data-driven decisions and not gut-driven decisions and understanding the landscaping, being able to forecast, and all of those things are important. But like so many of the things I think we try to implement in the corporate world, it gets taken to a point where it's either unsustainable or it no longer reflects the original meaning of what we were trying to do. And it becomes report-driven, presentation-driven. How can I tell my boss what he wants to hear versus what he needs to hear?
Yeah, I feel like data is the new paper, you know, people used to paper over issues, like produce memos. Good people are collecting data for data's sake. Yeah. That, you know, there's a great book I read 10 years ago, it's still relevant today, The Paradox of Choice. And it's about the concept that as human beings, we only handle 3 to maybe 4 pieces of information at a time. The more choice we have, the more data we have, we actually regress in our ability to solve a problem. And the key is finding out what are those 3 to 4 key data points that you can leverage that actually have an impact. And I think when designing a CRM, a sales team, or funnel, et cetera, whatever you're trying to do, it's really good to narrow down to the key data points. So data entry is not an issue, but the data is actually valuable. And so a lot of data today is just invaluable. I think we have tons of data centers full of garbage that are not actionable. They're just, it's like hoarded. It's the new hoarding of the digital era.
Yeah, I had argument's probably the wrong word, but fairly vigorous conversation about that, like, not all data is clean data, and not all clean data is good data, and not all good data is relevant and useful, because there's a lot of people who will say, our entire data set is so clean. And then I'll be like, cool, how is it good data? Is it interesting? Like, I can clean anything. That doesn't mean it's good and it's useful and helps me do something, right? Yep. And it's really easy to, it's like busy work for sure. It's really easy to say, like, oh, we've done all this foundational work. But it doesn't matter if you've done the foundational work, if you didn't do it in a way that actually helps your business move forward and make sense of what the reality is and where the reality should be.
Yeah, we build large enterprise systems for clients, and a lot of it's data-driven, of course. And our litmus test for whether you should include that data collection is, can you act on it to affect change? And if you can't, then you should probably not be collecting it. It's curiosity, but every time you add another point of data, you're creating more of a burden for your organization, creating more tech debt because you don't know what it's for. You have to have an actionable lever that you can pull that'll affect that data point going up or down to actually affect your objective. So if you're not actually doing that, then let's not collect that data. So, you know, we do works for, like, you know, large higher ed groups like Stanford University and associations and things like that. And these are the questions we ask. A lot of these organizations love to collect data because they feel like they're actually accomplishing something instead of really what they need to do.
Right. And it's hard too, because there's the balance, right? You don't want to throw it all away. You're doing the hard work of trying to do things the right way. It's when you get overzealous and you lose sight of the original reason that you started this transformation, this process, this experience in the first place.
Correct. Right. 100%.
So when people are trying to implement a new technology, whether it be AI or really any new innovation that they're bringing into their business, what do you think is the biggest blind spot they have as it relates to the success of their business, the success of the initiative, or to their overall growth?
Well, I think the biggest blind spot is the latest technology is the headlights of the oncoming car that they feel like they have to address. The shiny object. Now, you know, everybody, all our clients go, what can we do for AI? And I'm like, that's the wrong question to ask. Let's not call it AI. Let's not call it that. Let's start with your story. Where are you going as an organization? What are you trying to accomplish, and create your objectives in that sense and write that story and then find the technology. We always tell our clients we're technology agnostic. We don't care whether you want to use Salesforce or HubSpot or WordPress or, you know, some large Adobe AM product. It's really irrelevant what the product is. What is relevant is what you're trying to achieve. How can you serve your clients better? How can you grow your business better? And then you go out and you find the tool. But people generally are tool enamored instead of being really focused on what their core business is and what they're trying to accomplish. I mean, same thing. I go to Home Depot, I see so many drills. I'm like, oh, that's a beautiful drill. I don't need that drill, but it's beautiful.
I can't think of how many things I have purchased on my small macro level as an individual, simply because I felt like, you know what, it would be really cool to have this thing with no plans of how I actually use it. I bought one of those Steadicam gimbals for my smartphone, the ones where you could, like, walk around in your camera. I've literally used it, like, one time. I spent, like, $500 on this thing. And I'm sitting here going, like, why did I do this? Because I was like, oh, yeah, well, maybe this tool will enable me to take more videos and take more content. But in reality, I needed to say, I'm taking so much video and content that I need a tool to help support that process. So process and experience first, tool supports, not the other way around. The tool's not going to make you better at something simply because you have the tool.
Yeah, I think it's part and parcel of our material society. We feel like that'll fill a gap either in ourselves or in our business.
Right.
You know, I know a lot of organizations that Hail Mary, a Salesforce implementation. Why? Because they saw someone else should do it.
Right.
So why not try it?
Which is wild to me, because it's, and, like, again, in my own, just like thinking about my own experiences, how many times have we bought software thinking it will solve all of our problems when our problems are people and process?
You know, I always tell people it's in this order, it's people, processes, and platforms in an organization. And You start with the people, then the processes. You know, I was reading Atomic Habits by James Clear the other day, and he had a really good point. He's like, what if your objective is not to get to a certain point, but to actually have good systems or good processes?
Yeah.
And he says, how much better would an organization be successful if they worked on having really good processes and that results would come from that? And I think that's in personal life and everything. A lot of organizations, they would focus on the processes, because I don't know how many times we go into a client, they want to start this long project, we do a discovery. And then when you go to like take out the processes to re-engineer them or realign them, they don't have them written down anyway. It's all in shadow data and shadow processes. And that's where the real problem was in the very, it wasn't in the platform. It was the people not having the proper processes.
And maybe this is my hot take, but I truly believe that starting with platform is probably a function of fear and maybe a little bit of laziness, right? Like, it's really hard to change people and their behavior. And it's really tedious and time consuming to document process. And you know what? It feels a lot better to just slap up a piece of technology and, you know, brush your hands of it. And say, you know what, this failed not because of me or my team or not because of our process and our systems. This failed because the software sucked. And then that's, you know, the software's problem. It's not really about looking in the mirror at maybe the problem is you.
I think failed leadership at the very end of it, right? There's no bad team members. There's only bad leaders.
Yeah.
Kind of notion. And I you're 100% right. And trust me, it is hard leading. It is hard developing a team. It's hard. And it's basically 90% humility and 10% grit, you know, yeah, trying to get that to work. But you're absolutely right. Because if you, I've seen organizations that, you know, you look at their platforms, right? That's a terrible platform, but they have great people and you love to work with them. There's just a gentleman down the road, Carl's Mower. Carl just sells mowers. But man, what a wonderful business. Your relationship focused, every person in that organization, you walk into that floor room and you like being there. But yeah, all these tools, but you're there because you know that they care about you. They know that they have a relationship with you. I asked Carl once, I said, why don't you go online? Why don't you sell on e-commerce? It's like, e-commerce is not a relationship.
Right. You could triple, quadruple, you know, 10x your revenue if you did it. But
yeah,
if it's no longer who you want to be, then it's okay to say no to that.
It's great. And, you know, he's like, I got a great legacy. Out of my 4 sons, 3 work here. I'm like, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And, you know, growth for growth's sake is not a goal.
I think that's a perfect spot for us to mic drop that moment, because you're right. Growth for growth's sake is not the goal. So tell us, you know, considering all the people that you know or aspire to know, who else should we be listening to?
You know, one of the folks that were really helpful in our organization, I'd recommend you talking to as well. She'd be a great guest for you. Is Tracy Barrett of Navigate the Journey. So the organization's been really helpful to ours and our leadership team. Everything from doing assessments and coaching, but also really good. I mean, she's the closest thing to a Jedi, you know, where she's like, this is not the problem. You're like, no, it's not the problem. She's got a wealth of experience working with a lot of startups and businesses and, you know, late stage groups too as well, and helping them to really focus on the relationships and really focus on the core of what makes a company. And it's, whether it's, you know, the family unit or the team unit, people at the end of the day are the most important. And she does a great job.
And if someone is really connecting with you, they want to learn more, they want to follow along, they want some advice on their people, process, and platforms, where can they find you online?
I'm on LinkedIn at Dusty Gullison.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining this on the Growth Signal. Have a great rest of your day, and thank you for listening.
Thank you. Nice to be here.